Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
Good morning. I don't know if this is morning, but welcome into Half Street High Heat episode 143. Let's just pretend it's 143. No, it is not 143.
Isn't it like 193? I feel like.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I meant 193. So in my mind, as I was picturing the number, I mixed up my nines and fours because I have terrible handwriting in my hypothetical vision.
Your brain has terrible handwriting.
Right. So 193. Of Half Street High Heat. I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. I am joined by my lovely co-hosts. I'm not going to do your thing, Amanda. I'm not going to come up with a different word every time. That's your thing, not mine. Amanda at awhite7877 and Ryan at We Are All Shaq. And of course, follow the show at Half Street High Heat. The Nats, before we get into everything, just coming off a loss to the Diamondbacks tonight. They split the series two games, lots to talk about. I think, just off the top, we're starting to see like a better picture of who the Nats really are. There were some fun moments, over the past week or so, but I think now it's kind of reality is setting in a little bit, especially the injury bug, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But before we get into all that, let's do our quick pitch. Who do you think the worst team in baseball is? Not record-wise, but just on paper, at the end of the year, who's the worst team in baseball?
Pissy about them splitting a series with the Diamondbacks, so I want to say the Nats just out of irritation.
I mean, I'd say the Nats were worse than the Diamondbacks before the series. Honestly, I think it's between the Nats and the Reds. The Nats, in my opinion, and I don't really think it's up for debate, have the worst pitching staff in baseball. That includes bullpen as well, and depth, by far and away the worst. Middle of the order probably gets them above the Reds, but I would say it's between them two. Nats won't finish with like worst or second worst record than the year just because other teams have been tanking for longer and know how to do it better. But I'll go final answer, Reds.
Yeah, I like that. I think I would... Like I said, the Nats are on the list for sure, but they do have, like you said, the middle of the order. And I just feel like with Soto on the team, I don't know if he'll be the worst team in baseball. Like he's too good to make it, to have that guy on your team and still be the worst. So
it's one of 26.
I know, but he's just so impactful. I feel like he'll have enough hero moments at some point during the season to win them a few extra games and keep them from being the worst team on paper.
Man, I immediately went to the Orioles. And I was like, there's no way the Nats have a worse pitching staff than the Orioles. The Orioles pitching staff is better than the Nats.
They most assuredly do.
The Orioles have very sneaky good pitching depth as well. Yeah. And you have the top, like, two of the best pitching prospects as well. Their pitching staff is in good shape.
God, I'm looking. I don't have the actual team stats. I'm just looking at the roster and just clicking on random guys. They all have like good numbers, you know, 10 games into the season or what, or 15 games into the season, whatever, right now. What the hell? Like, how far are we falling? Oh man.
Reality check is not so fun.
No. Like, the Rangers only have two wins right now. They're not the worst team in baseball. I don't think they're great, but they're not the worst team in baseball. I want to say the Reds right now. Like, obviously right now, yes, but like going forward and projecting into the season, I want to see the Reds, because I think they sell even more if there is more. I guess technically they have Luis Castillo, who is he even pitching for them right now? I think he might be injured. And they have I'm not sure if Moustakas is worth anything at this point. He's on the Reds, right? Yeah, okay. But I just bring that up. Not that Castillo is better, but not that Moustakas is like a game changer, but I do think they will literally sell anything and everything. And with the Nats, at least they care enough to put off that PR front that, hey, we're trying to win. It's 100% PR.
Right, not a rebuild, right, or whatever.
Yeah, but you saw the Reds, and something we didn't talk about on the podcast, but they're, I don't know if it was their owner, or like the owner's son or someone like that. He was talking about, he was on some show. I think it was a radio show. And he was asked, you know, how do you respond to all the fans who say, you know, it's been a disappointment in the 16 years you've owned the team. And his immediate response was like, all right, let's start with, well, where else are you going to go?
I know. Like you, I saw that.
He was like challenging fans. And listen, it's Cincinnati and Ohio sucks. And I get that. But
he's not wrong.
At the very, yes, that's fair. At the very least, you should deserve an owner that cares. I mean, to just put it out there so bluntly is just, and we've talked about it on the show. Like, one of the, like, the lines from these million podcast episodes that we've done, one of the lines I'll always remember is like Ryan doing his weekend review after the 2020 season to start of 2021, and he goes, and the Red 60 game window has like quickly closed or whatever. I'm just like, because going into the 2020 season, albeit a shortened season, we are all kind of like excited about the Reds and what they're putting together. And then 60 games in a very, very weird season that you could not, you know, take to heart because of just all the randomness that went on that season, and the Reds just gave up and they're just giving guys away. It's just, so I guess I'm kind of like manifesting it too. Like, I just don't want the Reds to be, you know, rewarded for that kind of ownership, but you know, that's, you know, ownership probably doesn't really have much of an effect on that. It's just kind of crazy to hear someone kind of openly admit that, but I would say Reds, because I think anyone that is good, they will try to trade. And the Nats, they'll probably live in denial a little bit more, and that'll win them a couple extra games to help them not be in the basement. But they are bad. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. So on to the series, we're talking the four-game set against the Diamondbacks. Monday's game rained out, ended up being a doubleheader on Tuesday. And then, of course, Wednesday, wrapping up Thursday, won the doubleheader. They went up against Madison Bumgarner and Tyler Gilbert, two like pretty solid pitchers. Bumgarner's not what he once was, but they're able to knock off those two lefties. And then they got Merrill Kelly on Wednesday night and Zach Davies tonight. So they knocked off the two lefties, lost to the two righties. That's, I don't know if that's a pattern evolving. If we seem to hit lefties better, it seems like on paper we should hit righties better, but what do I know? Just overall thoughts on the series. I predicted 3 of 4 today, Thursday night we're recording this. It was definitely a winnable game. That there was a couple of things happened towards the end that, you know, cost them the game specifically. They lost 4-3. So it was definitely a winnable game. But just thoughts on the series as a whole, now that it's all wrapped up and we just saw our team split with the previously thought to be worst team in the NL.
I predicted a split, so it kind of worked out the way I thought. It was neat to, you know, it's fun for them to sweep the doubleheader. You know, Bumgarner, you just mentioned, is not what he once was, but he's got a 1.38 ERA. It's not like he's terrible. So it was a good win. And they held them in that, you know, that day where they had the two games, they held them to one run. And, you know, they're not a good offense, so that's kind of what you ought to do. But given how weak the pitching has been for the Nats, it was an encouraging performance. The last 2 days, a lot less so. Didn't you, Nick, have a bet on Hernandez getting a hit today? Was that?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. I went on quite the heater this week, and then I challenged it. I tried to heat check. I did heat check myself. Uh-huh. And the gambling gods were not too happy about that. Yeah,
he went over 4 today.
Yeah, so that's what I get for being a little too greedy. My apologies. And I'm probably going to go on a cold streak now because it's the gods smiting me for taunting them.
Yeah, probably so. Well, the game yesterday was dreadful. It was 11-2. When you let an offense like the Diamondbacks beat up on you that much, then, you know, that just does not speak well. Fetty got really torched. He only went 3.1 innings in that game, gave up 8 hits, 7 runs, 6 of them earned, and only 3 strikeouts. So that was not a good outing for him. He's sitting at a 6.75 now. And, you know, I mean, I didn't have high hopes for Fetty, but good grief, that was not a good performance. And today, Josh Rogers only went 4.1 and gave up 3 homers, and he's rocking a 5.14. I think, is it Adon? Is he the one who has the best ERA on the staff right now? I'd have to look.
No, Josiah Gray.
Josiah Gray. So Rogers looks bad, and so does Fetty. Both of these losses were not good. I mean, we've got additional injuries, bullpen injuries, which is not good. So it was, you know, it wasn't a great series for the Nats. The doubleheader wins were nice. It was good to see the pitching, you know, hold up and not give up a lot of runs, but that didn't last.
Yeah. One of the funniest things of the series was ironically, in yesterday's game when the Diamondbacks blew out the Nats. The Diamondbacks had scored 10 runs, and you can hear Kevin Franson trying to do the math really quick. And he starts saying a sentence and then he stops. And then the Diamondbacks push the 11th run across and he goes, all right, now I can say it. The Diamondbacks have scored 11 runs tonight. That's 33% of the runs they've scored this season all in one game. But it was just funny, like hearing him like stop and start. And but just goes to show the Diamondbacks are not good in their own right, and they, you know, took care of the Nats. And the second game of the doubleheader was great. Yeah, a win is a win, and we'll talk about more of the game specifics as we get deeper into the episode. But that was almost it should have been a blown save by Tanner Rainey. I don't know how the Diamondbacks don't win there.
It was
or push a run across there, at least one to tie the game. But they didn't, and the Nats, you know, escaped. But the Diamondbacks were the better team in the series, if we're being honest. Ryan, what were your thoughts on the series?
Well, the reason why it wasn't a blown save is because coming into the series, the Diamondbacks were by far the worst offensive team in baseball. Seth Beer, coming into it, was the only guy that was hitting. They were last in just about every single offensive category. But the series was just a snooze fest. Extremely boring to watch. Please never play the Diamondbacks again. But yeah, I mean, the series was so tough to watch. Not a lot of fans there, which doesn't really add to it either. Just a whole around snooze fest. Splitting against the Diamondbacks, like, really shouldn't happen. But like, when your team's the way it is, that's fine. Like, I guess it's one of those series that just highlights that this entire season is going to be, what did the young guys do day in and day out? That's truly the only thing that matters, not really the results of the games. Like, we're 15 games into the season. You kind of have to stress that because this team stinks. They went 3-5. They went 3-5 against the Pirates and the Diamondbacks. That says a lot about where they are as a team. You know, bright side, Victor Robles is hitting 200 over his last 7 games. Not trying to say the man's getting hot, but the man's getting hot because He's hitting 114 over his last 15. So guys heating up. It's just reiterating the point that don't get so focused in the results. Pay attention to what the young guys are doing. Victor Robles, Kieber Ruiz, Josiah Gray, Soto, Bell, not a young guy. Love the guy anyways. Paying attention to them and seeing their development is truly all that matters. And there's good and there's bad across the board and guys' development. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that as we dive into the series.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point and great sage advice by you. Just don't be so invested in the results. It's, you know, step by step, trust the process, all that, you know, PR talk, so to speak.
The happiness is low expectations. All that.
Well, the bar is the floor. That's why we could do these episodes without blowing our brains out because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have any expectations for this team. The expectation, if there was one, was that this team was going to stink, and they do. So we're feeling good because we were right. So that's kind of
the spirit.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it comes down to. But let's dive in. We'll, you know, if you've been listening to us before, you'll recognize this segment. We're going to talk good, bad, and ugly of the four game set. The good, I mean, we'll lump in, I was going to say bullpen, but we'll also lump in Josiah Gray and Ioana Don as well. But the bullpen has still been pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
And like you go to the, 11 run game on Wednesday night. Most of that was Fetty. I believe he gave up seven, mistaken. And then Patrick Murphy came in.
Yeah. I'm good on Patrick Murphy.
His outing was not good, but that was also assisted by the Lucius Fox error that led to two unearned runs as well. But then you get four clean innings of baseball from four guys that you would not expect. Like if this was C-Sheck, Doolittle, Finnegan, Rainey going four clean, you're like, okay, that's well within. We've seen that actually a couple times this season. But the four clean innings were Sam Clay, who we'll talk about why he's up in a little bit, Andrés Machado, Hunter Harvey, and Paolo Espino. Like them going four clean when you just expected that game to turn into another position player pitching type game, like that's promising. Like again, we lost the game and all that stuff, but we're focused on the individual performances right now because a lot of these guys are kind of fighting for their job right now. Amanda and I talked about it on the last episode. With the roster shrinking down, especially these bullpen guys, a lot of them are pitching for their jobs right now. So to see them come out and really compete, and Allison mentioned it on the spaces today after the game, like there's some guys, I'm sure you can probably guess who, that when they pitch, it just doesn't look like they even care about the result. Like they're just out there because they're supposed to. But, you know, it is good to see some of these young guys and some of these fringe guys really giving it their all and being frustrated in themselves if they don't do well and, you know, challenging themselves to do better. But thoughts on the bullpen. We lost Sean Doolittle to injury. That was quick. We lost Hunter Harvey. Not that that's a huge loss, but I mean, we're already scraping the bottom of the barrel with our bullpen. And obviously that's on top of Mason Thompson and Will Harris not being in the bullpen to begin with. Well, Mason Thompson shortly thereafter. But thoughts on the bullpen and obviously Josiah Gray and Ioana Don.
The bullpen is honestly facing the perfect lineups right now. The Braves lineup is just a mess right now. It's a complete and utter disaster. The Braves lineup is going to get better once Acuna comes back. So they got to see a bad Braves lineup without Acuna. They saw an average lineup in the Mets. And they saw a terrible lineup. Below average lineup in the Pirates. And then a bad lineup in the Diamondbacks. Those are good teams you want your young pitching staff to face early on in the season, especially ones that just aren't very good on paper, to get a little bit of confidence in themselves and, you know, build up upon them and get some results and build off that. Those are the right teams you want them to face early on. They succeeded. They did a great job against them. They're doing what they're supposed to. They unironically might have the best bullpen right now they've had in a while. The true test will come up once, I think after this series, they play the Giants next, I think. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, no, they do. Three games.
Okay, set. Yeah. By the way, that Giants-Mets series felt like a playoff series the whole time. That was 100%.
Yeah,
that was fun.
A fun one.
The Giants lineup is ugly on paper, but just some reason it it's good. I don't know. Makes no sense once again. But the lineup, I mean, not the lineup, the schedule is going to get tougher. So them having these games where they could go out there, be successful, and get that confidence is going to be important, because when you have guys who don't have a lot of innings underneath their belt, they're trying to find their way, trying to figure out who they are as a major league pitcher. Being able to face these bad teams and be successful is great. You know, that should have been a blown save with the bases loaded that wasn't. That's going to go a long way. It is unfortunate that Doolittle got hurt. The warning signs were there after his last start. His fastball velocity was down 2 miles. His curveball velocity was down 4 miles per hour. So the warning signs were there for him. But that just means it's another opportunity for a young guy to help figure things out and hopefully get in the groove and truly learn from it. Because it's all you can really look forward to right now, this bullpen that's surprisingly doing well, is just learning experiences.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting. Hunter Harvey, you just mentioned, Nick, it's not like that's some great loss, but he had only pitched four innings, but he had a zero ERA. I mean,
that's four clean innings. That's who he's been his entire life. Like, yeah, the stuff is there. Healthy. He just can't stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's on the IL now. They put him on the 10-day. Hopefully it won't be any longer than that, but they brought up Erasmo. I think I'm saying that right. Erasmo Ramirez.
Yes.
Who's 31. Interesting to me that they did not bring up Clippard. They brought this guy up instead. I did a little reading on him. It seems like he can go multiple innings. So Nick, we were talking in the last episode about how they're going to need somebody possibly for Saturday. So maybe their plan is to have somebody who can go multiple innings for them if they need.
It does seem, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, it does seem it's going to be a Spino now, because all you have to do is not pitch him tomorrow and he's good for Saturday. He just pitched an inning. He threw like 11 pitches on Wednesday night. Yeah, which is fine. That's effectively his midweek bullpen. Yeah, his midweek bullpen. So he should be good for Saturday.
Yeah. So they brought, but to me, it was quite interesting that they chose to bring Ramirez up rather than Clippard. Clippard's on the 40 man, isn't he?
I don't think so.
Is he not? Because I was like, because they had to put Ramirez, they had to clear a space on the 40 man to bring Ramirez up. And it was just interesting to me.
It's worth mentioning that corresponding move was moving Ahiri Adrianza to the 60-day IL. Sorry, my bad. But
Kyle Clipper is not.
He's not on the 40-man.
No. Okay.
So that wasn't the move. That was for Erasmo Ramirez, like Amanda said. That's important because that effectively pushes Lucius Fox into this backup role. And I think Lucius Fox was fun to root for at the beginning, but now we kind of see he's just not very good. If we're being honest, like, don't get me wrong, I want to root for I am rooting for the guy, and I hope he proves me wrong. But he's had some you want to talk about non-competitive at bats. He's probably the biggest culprit, and there's a reason he can't beat out Alcides. There's a reason he can't beat out Alcides Escobar.
Yeah,
like, at least Victor Robles can beat out Lane Thomas, sort of. Like, Lucius Fox can't even push for playing time against Alcides Escobar. And obviously we'll talk about Luis Garcia as well, as we do every episode, but Lucius Fox is basically their backup infielder. We saw him play third last night when Josh Bell got hurt and Michael Franco moved to first. So they signed Adrianza. It wasn't like anything crazy, but they signed him to be this utility man. And now without D. Strange Gordon, he's on the IL for kind of unspecified reasons. And now Adrianza on the 60 day, Lucius Fox is going to have to step up, but I'm not too confident in that.
Yeah. Well, back to the bullpen more generally, that was just interesting, the losing Harvey and what they chose to do in response. But, you know, in this series, the bullpen was impressive. I mean, they had the first game of the doubleheader, they had four clean innings, zero runs, three clean innings in the second game, a couple of hits from Rainey, but as we know, that one, he bent very far, but he did not break. The third game, the blowout game, wasn't great. But as you pointed out, the last four innings were clean, and it was Perez and Murphy who gave up runs. And then today, again, you know, it's what, five? No, four innings, right? Arano only pitched 2/3, if I remember. Four and 2/3. Right, of clean, no runs. So I didn't have high expectations for the bullpen. And they I think I've said this on every episode, they're exceeding my expectations, and they continue to impress a lot more than the lineup or the starting pitching, certainly.
Sorry, I was muted. It's good. And like Ryan's point, it definitely holds water. Like the teams we are, have been facing, like we haven't really faced that great of a team yet. I think, again, I do think the Mets are pretty good, and them winning 3 of 4 against the Giants and that pitching staff kind of shows that. It's early in the season. The Mets will collapse. The Mets are going to the Mets. But they're, as of now, April 21st, the best team in baseball, if you're just going off of win totals. But that lineup's not regarded as one of the best. So we're going to get tested. The bullpen's going to get tested here on out as our schedule starts to get a little bit more difficult. But it is good and super important with how the other two phases of the game, the starting pitching and, well, the obviously defense is a phase of the game, but starting pitching and offensively how we're doing right now, it's good to at least have one of those pillars doing well. And that's the bullpen, ironically, right now, which has seemingly always been our downfall.
As we all predicted.
Right, exactly. One name I want to mention that we haven't talked about, at least this episode, is Victor Arano. Allison's new favorite player. He threw her a ball. 8 games this season, 2.35 ERA, 7.2 innings, 12 strikeouts, 0.78 whip. He's been great. And with these injuries, especially the Doolittle injury, I think that's the key one. We could see Arano kind of fill in that Doolittle role. Yes, he's not a lefty, but Doolittle wasn't being overly used in those lefty-lefty matchups. And with the 3-batter minimum, the lefty-lefty specialists are kind of a dying breed.
On anyway, yeah.
Right. So I think Arano is probably the guy to step up into a more high leverage role, if there is such a thing, when you're playing for the Nats. So like a 6th-7th inning guy, because right now I don't understand Davey's bullpen usage still confuses me sometimes. It's been better as of late, because we've talked about, like, last episode and last 2 episodes, you've had 4 pretty dependable guys with C-Sheck, Doolittle, Finnegan, and Rainey. And now Doolittle gone, you have to have someone step up. But, you know, on paper, in theory, you have at least 3 right now. You know, the 4 I mentioned minus Doolittle. So, you know, his usage isn't
not overusing anybody to.
Right, right. Because he has 3 dependable guys. But again, like, using Arano to finish out an inning is just kind of, I don't know. It just seems like not the best use. And there's, that dives into the argument of, like, oh, well, the save doesn't always come in the 9th inning. It could come in the 5th inning or 6th inning or whatever. So I guess that logic could be applied. But if you're constantly pitching him, you know, as a bridge guy, I would like to see him in more high leverage roles with a clean inning too. But he's been great thus far, and hopefully he can keep
done
it up.
Good cleanup work for sure.
Yeah. Because we talked about, or talked to Jesse Doherty as we did our Nat season preview, and Victor Arano was the guy he picked to be that, you know, bold prediction, dark horse guy. And, you know, through 8 games or 8 appearances, we're seeing that, like, Victor Arano is the guy nobody's talking about right now, because again, the Nats bullpen as a whole has been generally pleasant, and you can't always say that. I don't even think I've ever said that about the Nats bullpen. So Victor Arano is definitely a part of that and worth mentioning, as well. But just to touch on the starting pitching, Josiah Gray, Johanna Don, awesome. Like, just, I think they went in a combined. Johanna Don set the record this season for Nats starting pitching going more than 6. So congrats to Johanna Don, just like we all expected. But I think like 11 and third between the two, 1 earned run, like 6 hits, 7 hits. And obviously those are the 2 wins. So shocker, when your starting pitching does well, you're more competitive. But they were great. Hopefully they can carry that over. I think Josiah Gray will go Sunday in the 3rd game against the Giants, so that'll be a good test. And Johanna Don will probably go next Tuesday against, I believe it's the Rockies who we play. And then tomorrow, Patrick Corbin, and Saturday, Paolo Espino. All right, let's move on to the bad, and specifically the top half of the lineup. They weren't all bad and not necessarily, you know, at the same time, but as a collective unit, there needed to be more. It's not like they're bad going forward, but it was kind of an underwhelming series when you look at the numbers. So if you're looking at the top 5, and Ruiz sat out the 2nd game of the doubleheader, so his numbers look a little bit better. And he went 4 for 8 in games 3 and 4. So obviously you will take that. But Cesar Hernandez, He went 3 for 17, and I think he had one walk as well. So just call it 4 for 18. Like, that's not very great. Soto, we'll talk about him a little bit later. And Ryan put out good stats about Soto. I think he's just getting really frustrated. He's not getting a lot to hit right now. He's still getting walked. He's up there in walks, so no surprise there. But when you can only get walked so much before you start swinging outside of the zone because you just want to hit. And I think we saw that at the end of the game today. He only had 2 hits in the series. He went 2 for 12. So obviously not very Soto-like. Cruz, obviously the home run today, but he only went 3 for 12 as well. Bell, he got hurt in game 3, so that's worth mentioning. That might have affected him today because he went 0 for 3 today, but he only had 3 hits in the series. Ruiz, he only had 4 hits in the series, but again, he took the second game of the doubleheader off. Just thoughts on the top half of the lineup, because offensively, you know, prior to the season, on paper, all that, whatever, you would say, oh, if our offense is going to click, these are the guys as to why it will click. And we saw it in bits and pieces. Obviously, the Nelson Cruz home run, Soto was on base, and, you know, Bell's been a pretty good RBI machine thus far this year. But it just seems like they're not clicking all at the same time, and that's a problem because our lineup is not deep enough to overcome those deficiencies and those inconsistencies. So what are your thoughts on the lineup, especially against the Diamondbacks, who, you know, their pitching's decent, but you should be able to hit them?
Yeah, I looking at the stats on, you know, hits from what, you know, which came from which part of the lineup here as you're talking, it's almost even, or, you know, I think 3 out of the 4 games, the top half of the lineup had one more hit than the bottom half. And as we know, the bottom half has not been great. And then there's one game where it was exactly even. So, I mean, they're not good numbers. I mean, Bell, this wasn't his very best series, but he's been hot to start the season. You know, he's hitting really, really well. What is his average now? 364. I think he's, you know, obviously that's early season type of numbers. It's not going to stay that high, but he's been really great. Unsoto-like was the perfect description you used there. So far, I don't think you can blame him. He's getting pitched around, and I'm sure that's starting to really frustrate and piss him off. But yeah, the top half of the lineup, and there have been a few times, especially in the Braves series, where the top half of the lineup was really clicking, and this series, it definitely wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup as a whole is just, like, on paper, it doesn't really intimidate you. The problems that we're seeing right now, and again, this is a very small sample size, things are going to change. We're only 15 games into the season. The bottom half isn't good. Like, we've talked about that ad nauseum, but when the top half isn't hitting or isn't clicking, this is what we're going to see, and it's ugly. Cesar Hernandez just isn't getting on consistently enough right now. He had that really nice streak where he started off every game with a hit. Problem was, that's the only thing he was doing. And so when you look at the fact that he only has a 265 on base percentage this year, that's an issue. Nelson Cruz is off to a very slow stretch this year. A little unfortunate. That's an issue as well. Josh Bell, absolute fantastic start to the season. Josh Bell is very streaky. He was also hitting above his means. He might start regressing soon anyways. That's fine. That's going to happen as well. Every single time a player has a hot start to the season, a 0 for 15 or a 2 for 17 streak follows it. That's baseball. That happens. A lot of these guys are still in spring training mode, and that's playing effect, not just for the Nats, but across the league as well. And I think as we finally start getting into May, we're going to see more hitters and more pitchers finally click as well. You know, like, it was a short spring training. This is supposed to be like the last week of spring training, if you count weeks wise. But the lineup as a whole is genuinely an issue. Kiber Ruiz, he had an 0 for 10 streak, but he snapped that by going 4 for 8 in a couple RBIs. His bat looks really good this year. He has a lot of bad luck. He's third in percentage of hits that go between a 10 to 15% launch angle. If you're hitting it between there, you're going to get hit a lot of hits. Bad luck is following him there. The issue with Soto is he's not getting anything to hit, but no one is making them pay around him. Like, when he is getting pitched to, he's 1 for 12 with runners in scoring position this year. He's only had 12 opportunities with runners in scoring position through 15 games. That's an issue. And the problem is Victor Robles, 184 on base percentage. Cesar Hernandez, 265 on base percentage. Cesar Hernandez needs to start getting on more consistently. The more consistent that he gets on, he's going to start getting pitched to. Nelson Cruz is not a factor right now. So with Cesar Hernandez constantly getting out, they're going to pitch around Soto because Nelson Cruz isn't scaring anyone. It's just, that's just the fact, the way the lineup is right now, for Soto to finally get pitched to and this offense to finally start going. Nelson Cruz needs to start hitting like he does, and Cesar Hernandez need to get on more consistently. It's only 15 games, yes, but there's some very concerning factors that we're seeing that this team needs to figure out quickly for this offense to have some kind of life for it, because the young guys that we want to see, they're going to start suffering because of that, and then it's just not going to be very fun to watch.
What do you think, Ryan, about the idea of moving Bell into where Cruz is behind Soto?
I personally don't hate it. I know they want to leave Cruz behind Soto just because Cruz is a consistent right-handed power bat. Josh Bell is streaky in the switch hitter, so I think they want that threat of a righty behind them just for teams to have a problem with when they go to like bullpens and stuff like that. But I don't hate it.
Yeah, I don't hate it either. Ryan, just a quick question for you. What would you consider a good on-base percentage to be? Like, what would you take? What would you accept?
So that, it depends position and where you're hitting in the lineup.
Just in general.
330 and up.
The Nats have three guys in their entire team, even guys that have only played one game, that have a on-base percentage higher than that. And one of them is Yadiel Hernandez, who cannot hit lefties. The other two, I'm sure you can guess, are Josh Bell and Juan Soto. So it's like... And I bring this up
with Yadiel Hernandez in that group.
Yeah, one of these is not like the others. But like, you know, to Ryan's point, and it's something I've been saying on the spaces and with Robles in particular, it's like, if they can just be pesky and annoying and see pitches and work walks and, you know, just have good contact, that's something that's at least contributing in some way. Like a hard out is still, you know, put the ball in play, good things happen type deal. But so many of these guys are just having non-competitive at-bats. Lane Thomas had one of the worst at-bats I've ever seen.
Like, you're never going to get over that.
Well, I talked about it in the spaces. I didn't talk about it in the podcast. Like, I'm not joking. It was literally one of the worst at-bats I've ever seen in my entire life. And I've seen pitchers hit. Like, it was one of the worst at-bats I have ever seen. For those that don't know what I was talking about, I believe it was game. Game two. Bases were loaded, two outs. The Tyler Gilbert was pitching. Pitching chains, righty comes in. I don't know exactly. Sutton or someone, whoever's in the Diamondbacks bullpen. Righty comes in to face Lane Thomas. If I were Davey, I would have immediately pinch hit Yadiel Hernandez there. We know Lane Thomas cannot hit righties. He leaves Lane Thomas in there. And it was the worst mistake ever. Lane Thomas, I think it ended up being like a 3-2 count because the pitcher was wild. Lane Thomas did not swing the bat once. And he struck out looking. He watched three pitches. Like, it's just, what are we doing? The bases are loaded, two outs, and you're only up one. Swing the damn bat. And this is the type of non-competitive at-bats that we're seeing. Riley Adams, who I think should be better than he is, so I'm not like completely out on him or anything, he's looked terrible at the plate. We've talked about Escobar and Fox and whatnot, but it's just any combination of guys you have down there are terrible, and that kind of transitions us into the ugly portion. And Amanda, you brought up a great point, like the top half was barely better than the bottom half. So, you know, the top half of the line could almost be in the ugly portion of this as well. But in the 4-game series, the bottom of the lineup, 6 through 9, hit 170. And if you take out Victor Robles, who went 3 for 13, they hit 150. Like, Victor Robles being the best part of the bottom of the second half of your lineup is just, that's terrible.
Hurtful, Nick. That's what that is. That's hurtful.
It's terrible. But to Ryan's point earlier, Victor Robles 3 for 13. That's a 231 average. Do that. Like, literally just do that, and I will be fine. because he actually made an impact. He's always going to make an impact defensively. He made a couple of great catches and great plays this series. But if you can just get on, you know, well, it's not getting on, but 230 average and bump up his abysmal on base percentage of 147 up to, like, you know, low 300s. That's fine. Like, we're not asking the world of you anymore. Like, just do something.
I think he is above 300. Well, no, that's OPS, not on base percentage.
Oh yeah, his OPS is above 300. He's fine.
Yeah, 327 OPS. Yeah, rocketing up the board, Victor Redlands. Yeah.
But we've talked about the bottom half of the lineup enough, and that problem's not going away anytime soon, because I mean, there's no reinforcements. There's no help on the way unless they go bargain bin shopping with all these impending DFA guys because the rosters are shrinking, which they could. They probably should based on the amount of injuries they have. Granted, they will have to clear space on the 40 man. Like, the bottom of the lineup is not going to change. One thing I do want to talk about is the dynamic with Fetty and Rogers, because they're both very similar pitchers. And I heard Charlie and Dave talking about it today, so I'm not going to take all the credit, but they made a good point. With Fetty and Rogers, neither of them have, like, swing and miss stuff. They're both soft contact, ideally. Soft contact, you know, hitting your spots, and Fetty hasn't been able to do that much throughout his career, so that's why, you know, he's been so bad most of his career. And Josh Rogers is kind of the same. Like, that's going to be a potential problem, and we kind of saw that today. The Diamondbacks obviously teed off Fetty yesterday, and Josh Rogers, granted he's a lefty and Fetty's a righty, they were able to tee off Rogers kind of the same. They hit, what, 3 home runs off him today. And he only gave up 4 runs, but it was in 4 1/3. Like, that's still an ERA above 9. Well, just below 9. It's something to think about. And again, we don't have a replacement on the horizon to take over, but if you just have guys that are solely reliant on pitching the contact, it's going to be so easy for teams, even the worst teams, like the Diamondbacks offense, to tee up on these guys. So you're not really doing yourself any favors either. I don't really have a solution, but I just thought,
yeah, who do they turn to? It's not like they have any pitching depth.
Yeah. It was just like an interesting point that they brought up. It's they're both soft throwing guys, and yes, they're major league pitchers, so I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but it's you're kind of handing it over. Like, Josiah Gray, Yoan Adon, they have swing and miss stuff, and Patrick Corbin, like, at the very least, he has his slider. When his slider's on, he's better. Like, Fetty and Rogers don't have anything. And if they're, especially Rogers going after Fetty, like, he's just going to continue to get teed up on.
He's made 3 starts now, right, Rogers?
Right. Yeah.
He's only pitched 9.2 innings in 3 starts. That's just awful.
Yes, because he went up against the Braves and then the Pirates, and then, yeah, today.
Yeah. So in 3 starts, 9.2 innings. I mean, it's just, I mean, I know that we keep talking about the results don't matter. It's, you know, it doesn't really, you just need a guy to eat innings, I guess, because this team's not competitive. But man, it's tough to see a guy averaging 3 innings per start. That's rough.
Team results don't matter, but individual results are absolutely crucial in this year.
Yeah,
this 100%. Is like Nick, you said you don't want to put Fetty down. I'll gladly do it. This is year 6. This is the 6th.
He's not a rookie. Year,
and he's still struggling. It's just, isn't it? You know, like, he's pitched 340 innings in his career. He has a 5.31 ERA. That's just not it. His whip is 1.5. His K rate isn't good at all. He's not a strikeout guy. That's fine. But the problem is he stinks. Like, he got 4 swings and misses against the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are atrocious. They strike out a lot as a team. I cannot stress this enough, how bad the Diamondbacks offense was coming into this series, and the Nats kind of revitalized them. A lot of that was with the 11-run game. You score 11 runs in the game, your offense is going to look pretty good. But he's not good. Like, how many innings did Patrick Murphy pitch in the Fetty game?
Patrick Murphy? I think he only went an inning.
Okay, well, he had 3 swings and misses. And Eric Fetty pitched, what, 4 or 5 innings? And he got 4 swings and misses? Yeah. He's Eric Fetty's not missing bats. he doesn't have the velocity, which is fine. If you're a starting pitcher and you don't have velocity, that's okay, because there's a lot of very, very successful starting pitchers that are finesse pitchers because they can pinpoint where they want the pitch to go. The issue is Eric Fetty can't pinpoint it. He doesn't get enough spin rate. He's not very accurate, and there's just not a lot of movement going on either. He is the prime example of the Nationals' developmental failures from 2011 on. Hopefully what the Nats are doing is, you know, gonna work, because Eric Fetty is that shining example of just the pitcher who had pretty good upside. Like, I'm not talking about top end rotation guy, but when Fetty was, you know, coming up, he projected as a solid 3 or 4.
Right
now he projects, I don't know, to play for the Savannah Bananas, that really annoying team that I keep seeing on my TikTok right now. It's just, he is headlining the list of the guys on this team that just aren't it. And it's so unfortunate to see, because the stuff on paper shouldn't equal this bad results, but here we are.
And he'll be here next year and maybe forever. I don't know why, but somehow he has a permanent place in the rotation no matter what. So,
well, again, you don't have much competition. So hopefully, in theory, you get Cavalli next year. Maybe if you luck out, you get Cole Henry next year. So that at least bumps out Fetty and Rogers. And with Rogers, it's not like we ever expected the world of him. Like, he didn't make the team out of camp. And again, that's no slight against him. I think, you know,
it's a little bit of a slight against
him. But I do think he's like trying hard. And we talked to, who was it? I think it was Jesse Doherty again. We talked about how Josh Rogers was like really working his ass off to make the team. And, you know, he had a fire under his ass. Whereas you look at, I'll just name him, it's not like we're strangers to disparaging this man, but Patrick Corbin, when things are going wrong, it looks like he could care less. Like, it's just a, you know, another day for him. And, you know, maybe they know this team sucks and all this stuff, and they're not going to be competitive, so it's hard to like get gassed up. But it's nice seeing guys that at least care, and that only goes so far. I understand, like, results matter, and, you know, we're trying to build a team.
People who get upset when they suck and people who don't.
And that's my point. So it's like Josh Rogers, I'm like okay with in the meantime. He's not gonna project to be anything special, you know, impact player at this level. But yeah, I'm completely out on Eric Fetty. There's no redeeming qualities about him, to be honest. Like Ryan was saying, if you're kind of a soft, it feels so weird saying soft throwing. I'm just using it because that's how Charlie and Dave described him. But soft throwing, like low 90s, 90, 91, or, you know, some guys even throw softer than that. You have to be so precise with your location. And Fetty might be the farthest thing from it. Like, we talked about how much he nibbles and just does not throw strikes, and just is the most infuriating pitcher to watch in the Nats currently. Like, he's never going to be that guy without a major, major developmental breakthrough, which I don't think comes with this organization.
Not after 6 years. I mean, yeah, no. Maybe with a change of scenery, maybe. Like,
I think the absolute worst case scenario, is if he turns into a Kevin Gausman, but that's also a kind of an extreme. Yes, Kevin Gausman was a late breakout candidate, but Kevin Gausman has, like, you know, he has the velocity and the extreme movement on his pitches as well.
I think he went 8 today. I was listening to
But I mean, that was 3 years after his breakout. So I'm not surprised. Yeah. I mean, he just got a 9-figure deal in the offseason. So it's, you can't really compare them 1-to-1 right now. But I just, because the Orioles tried to make Kevin Gausman a thing forever. Even the Braves traded for him, weren't able to make it through. And it wasn't until he, you know, took a flyer with the Giants where he kind of broke through in 2020 and then replicated it in 2021 and got paid. Like, but that's absolute worst case scenario for the Nats. But that's what, literally one in a million. Like, there's probably been a million pitchers that have come through and just not
been Kenny Gausman.
Right, exactly. And
so I have a question.
Eric Fetty doesn't profile like that, so it's time to just move on. What's up?
Given the feelings about both Rogers and Fetty, particularly Fetty, how do you feel about Anibal Sanchez once he's healthy? Would you rather see him in the rotation than one of those guys? Or would you rather stick with
those? No, No, I've said it before and I'll keep saying it 100 times. Watching a young guy struggle is completely different than watching a 37-year-old bum. Yes, I am calling Anibal Sanchez a bum. I don't want to see that guy in the majors. I don't care. I have a whole, actually, hold on. Let me rephrase that. I do want to see him in the majors just because I have a lot of narratives against him.
Yeah, you want to watch him beat lit up.
I can get some funny tweets, but no, that's a serious question. I think that's a question the Nats are talking to themselves about. I hope they don't. Again, I'm not going to rip Rogers. No expectations from him whatsoever. I think he could be a useful, like, Paolo Espino type. Put him in the bullpen. You know, you have your long man role. He could make a spot start here or there. Maybe projects as like a 7 guy in the rotation. But Eric Fedde, I will rip just because what it should have been. But no, I'd rather see
still rather see Fedde than Sanchez.
Yes, I don't want. It's like Alcides Escobar. I don't want to watch Alcides Escobar struggle. I'd much rather see Luis Garcia potentially struggle and make errors up in the major leagues. It's like that type of thing. You know what I mean?
Both on that for sure. Well, I think you might get your wish because the latest injury update on Sanchez that I saw today was that he's not even throwing and is only rehabbing, and they might let him start building up his arm sometime in the distant future. So like, I don't think he's going to be making any appearances anyway.
There's a real chance he just retires. Like, if we're being honest, he didn't pitch last year. He's not throwing right now, which, hey, you're a pitcher. You kind of need to throw the damn baseball. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's kind of important. But to your question, I'm willing to see it. It's not a matter of like want or anything like that. I don't want to see either of them on this team, if we're being honest. But if I have to choose one, yeah, I'm willing to at least give Anibal Sanchez a couple starts. Just to see, it's not like Fetty's locking down a position. He's only there as a placeholder because we don't have anyone else. So it's like, I'm willing to see, because we just talked about Fetty. After 6 years, I think we know what we got. But if Sanchez is the same as Fetty, then just give me Fetty, because at least there's that small sliver of hope that he could be a little bit better.
He could figure it out. Yeah. Okay. I was just thinking about it as an interesting, since I think there's a consensus here, which is rare. We don't always have a consensus that we're all set on Eric Fedde.
Yeah, we are definitely all set. Ryan, I want to get your thoughts on something Amanda and I talked about on Monday, if we're talking release day, Luis Garcia. And I know you've talked about like the difference in strategy between someone like Luis Garcia and Victor Robles, or, you know, any of these other young guys that they've had up. I mean, even Riley Adams. At what point do you think the Nats need to call up Luis Garcia?
I don't really get why he's not up now. He's hitting well in the minor leagues, which is pretty good to see, because he hasn't truly done that in the minor leagues before. He's always been right around average in the minor leagues. I think they just want him to get more familiar with shortstop and kind of work out some of the defensive kinks that are going to be following him there. My only question about that is, this team isn't going places, so why does it matter? Like, Michael Franco had 3 errors at third base the other day. Like,
oh my god, yeah, we didn't even mention that.
Why does it matter seeing Luis Garcia struggle at shortstop in the major leagues? Like, personally, I think he will learn a little bit more when you're on a team that isn't going to be doing anything. But I think if he continues hitting like this mid-May, if he starts to struggle a little bit, we'll probably see him in June. Unless, like, Alcides Escobar just completely just goes even more poo-poo than he is now, then they might have to.
Yeah, and the only argument that I see for keeping him down is, oh, we don't want to ruin his confidence or something. But I don't know. I don't think most players are that delicate. And he's been up and down a couple times already. He's, I think, obviously, you know, reached the potential he's going to reach in the minors. And if he's going, he is still struggling defensively, which, as you just pointed out, Ryan, who cares if he struggles defensively? Why not get him up here where he can get at bats against major league pitching and continue to develop on the hitting side, you know, on his offense, and then let him struggle defensively here rather than in AAA. I just don't get why we're watching all these old retreads instead of letting a guy like Garcia, who's the future of the team, get some major league exposure. It just makes no sense to me at all.
No, none. I mean, speaking of consensus, it sounds like we're all in agreement there, but it's just, yeah, it makes no sense. And I obviously echo your guys' points. If you think back to when we did our rankings, and it was mainly in the shortstops episode when we did our rankings, Ryan made the point that defense does not matter if you're hitting. And I'm not trying to say Luis Garcia is going to hit to the level of a Xander Bogaerts or a pipe dream Fernando Tatis level production offensively. But if he's hitting,
I would like to see it,
especially compared to the rest of this lineup, or like most of this lineup, you will gladly, super willingly forgive any defensive shortcomings if he's able to hit. If he's able to hit, trying to pull up Kaber Ruiz's stats right now. Kaber Ruiz, 238. Oh, well, I guess it's gone down a little bit after that over 10, but 238, 233, 310. I don't like that one.
No, God, it's
this team sucks.
He's hold on. That's not updated. Kaber Ruiz is hitting 261, 255, 326.
Okay, that's a little bit better. Yeah, so what, like a 700 OPS, still not great, but if he can provide some, my point is Kaber Ruiz has had flashes offensively. That's really what I'm trying to say, and I'm doing a poor job at saying it. But if you get that from Luis Garcia, nobody's talking about Kaber Ruiz's struggles. We're only talking about the good things that have come with Kaber Ruiz playing at the major league level. And Kaber Ruiz has had plenty of struggles and opportunities to work on and to grow into. But nobody's talking about that right now because we're just happy to see him playing and just having some semblance of success at the major league level. The same can be applied to Luis Garcia. Yes, he's not going to be the prized trade chip from Max Scherzer and Trey Turner and this top prospect in baseball. No, but look how the fanfare was for Lucius Fox when he came up. Everyone wanted Lucius Fox to do well. And, you know, he made the one diving play and then has been kind of a liability ever since. Oh, and the sack bunt. I mean, I got to show love to people who bunt. But, you know, look at the fanfare for that. If Luis Garcia comes up, everyone's going to be wanting him to succeed. And if he does have any semblance of success, even just like a clutch hit, one clutch hit, you know, that's going to be a building block for him to just grow into, you know, his role as a MLB player. And he's going to be able to grow with this team. It makes no sense that you have this young core, this young nucleus up at the major league level, and you're excluding seemingly one of your key guys who already has a decent amount of major league experience from that equation. It just doesn't make much sense to me. Yes, last year was kind of a throwaway after the deadline, but that's still valuable major league experience that he got. And I believe he was up in 2020 as well. Like, cause I remember obviously his first home run with no fans in the stands and just the worst home run call of all time. Like, he has a good amount of major league experience. He had more than Kaber Ruiz. He had more than Lucius Fox. And he still was not the first guy. It makes no sense. You need to call him up now, in my mind.
And what I agree. Is the worst case? That's the question to me. Like, what's the worst thing? He has three errors in the same game. Like, okay.
Obviously like Michael that's Franco.
Not, right. Obviously that's not a, you know, deterrent to this coaching staff. So I don't know. I'm with you. Just call him up.
You know what the worst thing would be? He hits 167, 255, 190. And is then he has that is Alcides Escobar. And then he has a -4 defensive run save through 11 games played. You're telling me Luis Garcia can't do that?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think Luis Garcia is a shortstop going forward.
No, but he'll be better than that.
No, I agree. I agree.
Booty like, cheeks.
Yes, I agree. That wasn't to say like as to a reason why you shouldn't be called up. I'm just saying, you know, if that's not where he projects long term, like it doesn't matter. Just put him up with the major league experience, so at least he can get his rhythm offensively as well and see major league pitching. It's, I don't know. We can talk about this forever. It just makes no sense. And you kind of go back to, you know, the learner's sale and the offseason moves. The Nats have no clue what they're doing. They are not consistent whatsoever. They tell Nelson Cruz they're trying to win, and they make no other, you know, substantial moves in the offseason. They keep Luis Garcia down, but they, you know, are willing to let anyone and everyone else struggle at the major league level. Like, there's no consistency. There's no like breadcrumb trail that you can follow their thought process. Like, there's no consistency with this team. They're literally flying by the seat of their pants. And I just don't see a world where they get lucky like they did before. Let's call a spade a spade. They got lucky with Strasburg and Harper and Rendon in three consecutive drafts. That's an unreal three consecutive years in drafts. And obviously two of those were top pick or like number one overall picks. But I mean, even the number one overall pick is far from a sure thing. Like, look at Dansby Swanson. Yes, I mean, he's a contributor for that Braves World Series team, but there's talks that they might not even re-sign him at the end of the year. Like, the number one pick is far from a sure thing. And you got three pretty generational players. Like, Anthony Rendon is probably the weakest of the bunch, but he still got a fat paycheck and, you know, was an MVP candidate and arguably should have been MVP that year as well. Like, they're not going to have that again. That doesn't come around. That's not a game plan. So that coupled with, you know, their strategy this year and specifically the Luis Garcia thing, like we're talking about, just tells me they have no consistency in their thought process. Like, I don't know if it's just the shift with all the scouts, right? Cause they overhauled their developmental team and their scouting department and all that stuff. I don't know if it's like a new mindset that they are trying to implement and it needs a little bit to come to fruition. Like, I am hoping so, just for the Nat's sake, but there's just no consistency with this team whatsoever. And it sucks.
Yep. That's cogent analysis. It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Couldn't agree.
But I imagine this preview we'll get into of the upcoming Giants series will be quick. But if you're looking at the series, the Nats are back in action tomorrow or today on release day. The Giants have not announced their starter yet, but if you're looking at it, it's probably going to be, I think it was supposed to be Logan Webb. I'll pull that up, but you're probably going to get Logan Webb, Alex Cobb, and Alex Wood. And I get Cobb and Wood are not, you know, the scariest names on paper, but the Giants, I think Ryan said this last year, the Giants are cheating. Like, they're doing something that with this pitching staff, that's just unreal. Like, so many teams tried to fix Kevin Gausman and they weren't able to, and the Giants made him a Cy Young contender. So that's a little
odd. They're doing something right.
Yeah. We'll probably get Alex Wood tomorrow. And then let's see. I'm trying to see who started their double. Cause they were in the Nats position. They had a double rain out Monday, doubleheader Tuesday. We'll probably get Cobb or, no, it'll probably be Cobb on Saturday and then Webb on Sunday against Josiah Gray. So it's like Josiah Gray is our best chance to win, but he's going up against Logan Webb. And, you know, it's not like Josiah Gray gets a ton of run support as is. So it's not, and it's also not like the Nats are going to score off Logan Webb either. So Wood, Cobb, Webb, four letter assassins. That's the trio. This series against the Giants, and that's up against Corbin, Espino, and Gray. Thoughts, expectations for the series?
Expectations low. So when you look at the Giants, the strength of this team is pitching. Starting pitchers, they're fourth in ERA, sixth in WHIP, first in K per nine, first in home run per nine, and sixth per walk per nine. They don't give up home runs, and they're going to strike you out a hell of a lot, and they don't give up base runners. Doesn't really get much easier when you go to the bullpen either. Their bullpen second in the ERA, 13 in WHIP, 24th in K per nine. They don't strike you out as much. Seventh in hits per nine and third in home runs per nine. Hitting is around league average, a little worse. 15th in OPS, 18th in average, 12th in runs, 6th in home runs, 5th in stolen bases as well. So that'd be a good little challenge for this defense as well. Excuse me. Expectation? I don't have any. They just had a very good series with the Mets. I don't know. I'm expecting a sweep. hoping just to lose two out of three. But on paper, you know, the lineup is average. So hopefully the pitching can do well, but regardless who they throw out there, their pitching staff and bullpen's been rather lights out. They missed some of the big heads, which is kind of nice. Well, some, but yeah, I mean, I'm not really expecting much for this series.
Yeah, I'm kind of, a sweep wouldn't surprise me. I think the ceiling is they take one. You know, Ryan just gave us a very nice rundown on the stats. This team is better than the Nationals, certainly on paper and certainly with the eyeball test. And as you say, they just had a really strong series against the Mets, who are arguably the best team in baseball right now. So I do have expectations of this team in there, or of this series, and they are very low.
Yeah. And just as the Giants' strength is their pitching, the Nationals' weakness, we talked about the lineup a lot tonight, but the Nationals' weakness is their pitching as a whole, and that's including the bullpen. If you're looking at the league totals, and keep in mind the Nats have currently played one more game than a lot of teams, but they are leading the league in runs allowed and hits allowed and walks allowed. So not great there. Yeah,
that's the perfect time for that. Is that good GIF that you see online a lot?
Right, exactly. So I'm expecting a sweep. Are you guys expecting a sweep too?
Is it? I think the ceiling is they steal one. Like they, you know, San Francisco.
I just don't see where. Like I guess you can. You can throw out a Patrick Corbin performance because Alex Wood is like a five inning most at most guy, like maybe. But I just don't see it.
Maybe if Corbin manages to have a decent outing where he only allows a couple of runs and the bullpen can be lights out, then, you know, maybe the middle of the lineup can get a little something done. Maybe that's how they steal one. But I think most likely a sweep.
Tyler Beede is a projected starter on Friday. Never heard of him before my life.
Say, otherwise, me neither.
So they must be going like the Espino route.
Okay. Don't know what to expect from him because I have no idea who he is or what his numbers look like.
Yeah, so I mean, he's definitely going to go seven scoreless if we're being honest.
We're definitely going to make him look like a
Cy Young. The Nats have no information about him, so that's like the, you know, best thing the Giants could hope for. So I think we're all on the sweep. If I had to put my money somewhere, which I will be putting my money somewhere, so I hopefully get back on track. Because today was disappointing. My apologies to anyone who tailed me today. But if you tailed me the last couple of days, you should at the very worst be even, because I was on quite the heater. All right. We're going to wrap the show the way we end all of our shows with our one big thing. I'll go first, and it's Nationals related tonight. And it's one thing we did not talk about. Donovan Casey. D-Strange Gordon goes on the IL. They call up Donovan Casey. And I wasn't expecting, you know, a new Juan Soto. I wasn't expecting, you know, even a K-Bear Ruiz type impact. I was just expecting, you know, a young guy, similar to how I talked about with Luis Garcia, just fun getting to see what he's got. Even if it was only for a couple games till DSG got back, even if it was, you know, only for a couple games until you needed to make a move to get more bullpen pieces. I was just excited to see him. And you were playing the Pirates, you're playing the Diamondbacks. It's not like he was going up against, you know, the Dodgers rotation or the Brewers rotation or anything like that. Like, it was a pretty good stretch to ease in a young guy. And you had the need too. We talked about the bottom of the lineup every single time we, you know, get together and talk, how bad it is. Like, some sort of energy to that bottom half of the lineup would have been awesome to have seen, at least the chance to have seen. And Donovan Casey, he's a bit of a boomer bust guy. He has good power, but he, you know, tends to strike out a lot. But again, just that chance, that opportunity, like maybe you catch lightning in a bottle. Who knows? We didn't expect Juan Soto to be this good. Like who knows? I don't know. But instead, the Nats treated one of their top prospects and one of their, you know, prized return assets from the Max Scherzer Trey Turner deal as nothing more than like a warm body bench warmer. He was up for five games and he did not see the field once, not even as a defensive sub. He plays all three outfield positions. Like he could have been in there. Like there's just no reason whatsoever that he comes up for five games against two of the worst teams in the National League and doesn't even see an at bat. Like he was literally just a warm body. That's not – You don't do that with a prospect. If you do that, and you know, this is just an example, he's not in the 40 man, so they couldn't have, but you do that with a Gerardo Parra or an Andrew Stevenson or something like that.
Right.
You don't do that with a top prospect. And I'm not trying to say, oh, his growth is going to be stunted now and his career is ruined. Like, in reality, this probably won't impact Donovan Casey's career, but it's incredibly stupid and reckless to just call up a prospect and just take 5-6 days, probably 7 if you include the travel days, out of his routine. Because now he's going to have to get back to AAA, get used to, you know, playing every day. And I haven't looked at his stats today. I think he just got sent down yesterday. But it just makes no sense. And it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, saying earlier, the Nats have no consistency with their thought process and their actions specifically. Like, that legitimately made me mad. And I'm at the point, you know, this year where I don't care. Like Ryan said, I'm not going to be too invested in the results. I'm invested in the individual performances. I wanted to see Donovan Casey, but more than that, more than just wanting to see him, you should have played him. You had a doubleheader. You had, you know, no days. Oh, well, I mean, Monday was an unexpected rainout, but like there was plenty of opportunities and legitimate reasons to put him in, and you didn't. And I'm not trying to say he's going to be an MVP candidate and all this stuff. He might be a bust. He very well could be, but you don't do that with one of your prospects. Like, if they do call up Luis Garcia, you don't sit him behind Alcides Escobar. Like, you just don't do that with your top prospects. It made me so mad that, of course, these guys aren't developing. They're treating them like warm bodies. It made me so mad to see that. So I really hope he just, you know, scorches AAA, gets called up, and really gets his opportunity, because that, you know, really, really pissed me off.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it leaves a bad taste in his mouth. You know what I mean? That's the important thing. You want a good relationship with this. He's newer to the system. It's his first, you know, his opportunity to play for the Nats, and you bring him up and just sit him. I don't know. You're right. It was, to me, just piss poor form. Just something you shouldn't do. I didn't like it either.
All right. What's your one big thing?
My one big thing is, as we all know, that Miguel Cabrera is looking for his 3,000th hit, which is super cool. He had the opportunity in his last at bat today, and instead walked him. Oh, was that yours? Which, yes, annoyed the crap out of me. I understand that, like, the game is the game, blah, blah. This is, to me, like when there's a no hitter going and you try to spoil it in the ninth, even though you know you're not going to win the game. Like, it's just a dick move. Pardon my French. And it just drove me nuts. I was like, really? Like, everybody's there. Everybody's watching. Everybody's there because they want to try to see him get his 3,000th hit, and you intentionally walk him so that he doesn't even have the opportunity. Just bad form. Worse than not playing Donovan Casey. So that's my one big thing. F you, Yankees.
Yeah. I'm going to quickly piggyback off that. Karen move, because they were sold out. Comerica sold out. When was the last time we saw Comerica sold out? In April, by the way, because it's still very cold in Detroit this time of year. But what's his name? Miguel Cabrera had a really funny response to it when they asked him. He was like, it's okay, my on base went up. Like, just completely shrugged off. That. But
such a pro.
It's a dick move. Yeah. I want to see him do it at home. Like, everything he means to that franchise, it's really cool. But you mentioned breaking up a no-hitter. The Astros player tried to bunt to break up Otani's no hitter, and he got booed by his own fans, which was so funny.
I love that. Yeah, yeah, like a real baseball fan knows there are some things you don't do. Like you said, Comerica was sold out. Everybody was there to see it happen, and it's fine if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But like, to make it so it couldn't possibly happen, to just remove the opportunity, it was just terrible.
And Otani's one thing, it's a no hitter. There's been a ton of those, and especially by guys that are not anything special. Homer Bailey threw two, but Otani was throwing a perfect game. Like, that's such a dick move to bunt during a perfect game. And I mean, Otani had like 17 strikeouts through 4 innings. Like, it was absurd,
especially against a universally loved player.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Otani.
Yeah.
And like, wouldn't you rather lose and be part of a perfect game than break it up and end up just being like some stupid footnote that nobody ever thinks about or talks about again? I mean, it's just,
I would just rather like earn it. Like, I just, I, ironically, I said this on the Space Today. I hate the idea of Bunsen for a hit unless it's against the shift, which the shift is kind of stupid anyways. Well, not stupid. Like it works for a lot of teams, but I just hate it as a fan. But unless you're bunting against the shift, like bunting for a hit is so stupid at the major league level. It works in college. It certainly works at the lower levels, but at the major league level, it's so stupid. I absolutely hate it. So to break up a no hitter, I mean, if you try to bunt for a hit, I just automatically give you an error. Like you reach on an error or like a fielder's choice or something. Like I'm not counting that as a hit. You're just scum. But the good news with the Miguel Cabrera thing is at least the Tigers are at home tomorrow. Like it would have been horrible, like 10 times worse if the Yankees pulled that and then the Tigers go on the road tomorrow. Like that would have been an extreme gut punch.
Which they absolutely would have because they don't care.
No, they don't care. So that would have been bad. But thankfully they are home tomorrow. And well, I imagine
I'm rooting there'll be another for it. Sellout. Watching it on my phone to see like when he has an at bat, I'm like, I gotta at least be on the MLB at bat app so I can know when it happens.
God, in a sold out crowd on a day game on a Thursday, like, right? Damn,
because you want to watch history and right. The Yankees.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I mean, Amanda, you're going to be traveling to Vancouver when Ovi's going for 800. I don't care if it's Edmonton. So.
When Ovi's about to break that record. I'm going to follow the damn team around, even if it's in Western Canada, until it happens. I'm going to be in the building.
And I respect it. But all right, that pretty much does it for this episode. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Half Street High Heat and check out the Patreon. We're posting stuff every single day. We're kind of mixing up. We're still doing all of the podcasts, but we're doing more of the articles now too. Obviously, the Pickoff, our gambling show, has daily picks. So Matt's been posting articles every single day and just with picks. So it's short and sweet to the point. You can just read it, tail it if you so choose. Ryan and I have been guest spotting with some picks on there as well. So we're doing that every day, but we still will do the podcast as well. CK posted a fantasy baseball article today. So we're mixing it up. It's not going to be all episodes because I know we only have so much free time during the week. And obviously we still want you listening to this episode. So we're mixing it up with our content. So you don't have to listen to like 40 hours of content in a week. You know, we can mix it up and you still get your baseball fix as well. So be sure to check out the Patreon. I mean, everyone's been killing it. I'm very happy with how that's turning out. Thank you guys for your support. So be sure to check out the Patreon. You can just search Half Street High Heat on Patreon and you will see all the different tiers for membership as well. And be sure to check out the site at halfstreethighheat.com. Again, same thing I just said about the Patreon to the site. It's been great all off season long, but I mean, now that we're in season, still killing it too. Monty does a phenomenal job over there. Even with all the million things he has going on in his life, like he still runs a clean ship over at the site. So be sure to check that out and all the latest good stuff from our writing team and the YouTube channel. Trey, I mean, again, he's killing it. YouTube, go to youtube.com/halfstreethighheat and hit that subscribe bell so that way you don't miss a single video content analysis that Trey does. It's great stuff. Like he has a couple of videos that are 20 to 30 minutes, but then he has a couple that are like 3 to 4. So, you know, it's just a quick deep dive. It's fun to just dive down the rabbit hole and just get, you know, lost in the baseball content. That's what Trey can do for you, and that's what we can do for you at Half Street High Heat. So be sure to check us out basically anywhere. If there's like internet involved, we're there. So just search us. Like you just never know. So do that and you won't be disappointed. But that's all I got. You guys got anything else before we head out?
Nope.
Me neither. I hope Josiah Gray continues because obviously a good start against the Braves, rough start against the Mets, but it was early on and it was cold. And then great start against the Diamondbacks. So hopefully he can continue it on Sunday at home day game in front of, well, I was going to say in front of a lot of fans, but it might only be like 13,000. So
if history is any indication.
Yeah. I hope Josiah can continue his, hot stretch that he's been on. All right, that does it for this episode. Again, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Half Street High Heat, Amanda at @awhite7877, Ryan at @wearealshack, and myself at @thecoachmoose. We appreciate you listening And in the meantime, let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats, we've got a game to play.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.